Well, good evening again, Whānau. Tonight we're going to talk about the race relations divide in Aotearoa, but more importantly, with somebody who knows not only what he's talking about, but has confronted the issue, particularly when it comes to Te Reo Māori when he was a youngster. I am, of course, talking about former Labour MP and Minister of Māori Affairs here in Aotearoa, Dover Samuels. Dover, good evening.
Tēnā koe. Tēnā koe. Hanga tō pā, hanga tō pua. E hata mea nui. What's the greatest thing on this earth? I do. He muni, he muni, he muni.
Kia ora, kia ora. Tēnā koe. Good to be with you, Dover. Hey, thanks for joining us. Look, you have literally been and seen it all. You've heard it all. You've been in politics. You've been in the community and all the rest of it, right? But we are starting to see the emergence of a race divide in Aotearoa, unseen of for some time. And I'm talking about, for example, these protests over the weekend. We're seeing signs being carried, people saying you're shoving Māori down our throats. It's New Zealand, not Aotearoa. What's your interpretation of what's going on?
Well, this is nothing new, except the dark side has been covered up for many years. There's been you know, different variations of the same sort of underlying underbelly of those people, and all you've got to do is provide the landscape for it to fester and come out, and they can no longer hide behind the illusion that everything is fine and that we're all on an equal basis, both social, economically. I mean, that's been around, and I don't actually see it getting any better, especially with this COVID, and it's all mixed up with that stuff. And the reluctance of some of our people not getting the vaccine, and the criticism and the abuse that many whānau have copped. And I think that that basically the government and the media and also the daily days of our lives sort of stuff that's coming out of the beehive at 1 o'clock really is part of the of their agenda. I think it's an opportunity that has been given to those who would have been exposed, but the landscape has given them, has put wind in their sails, put it that way.
So you're right.
They've come out now. Absolutely.
It's kind of like giving them an operating environment. They've become more emboldened. I mean, you know, we saw a news grab the other day on TV3, Judith Collins taking a selfie next to a guy wearing a hat saying "Arrest Jacinda," which comes from that Donald Trump sort of playbook in the United States. But, I mean, it's still pretty confronting when you see the Māori flag being flown right next door to the Donald Trump, re-election campaign flag in Aotearoa, which is, of course, a long way away from the United States.
Well, as I said before, there's always been that underbelly there. And I think if you think it's going to go away... then you'd better think again. It's there to stay. It's a little bit like the dream time of politicians that, in fact, when he got hit with this COVID-19 in the early days, that, in fact, the answer to that is eradication.
Yeah.
And now they've realised that was the greatest mistake that they made. They took things for granted, and all of a sudden, here it comes.
Yeah.
Right, a double barrel, and now they've changed their mind simply because they've gone into damage control and they've realised that, in fact, it ain't going to happen. There's not going to be any eradication. And similarly, racism is of the same nature. I mean, the opportunity, the stage has to be set for this, you know, that kind of attitude to emerge. And it's here and now, and that's what's happening.
Well, that's right. I mean,
as you see, a lot of racism and a lot of this this stuff is generated by this atmosphere, by this climate, and it's soaked into religion.
Yeah,
it's actually permeated into many parts of our community, and it's just like rust; it never dies. And when it gets the opportunity to be seen, there it is, starkly in front of you.
Yeah, it's like we're pulled off the band-aid of a pre-existing festering wound and the belief that we might have cured it, but it's still there, it's still hanging around, it's still infected with pus. I want to talk about this call of yours as well. I mean, I remember the stories from my own dad when he was at school in the 50s and 60s. He came from Matakanar Island, the great Matakanar Island, of course, yep. David. And literally, Te Reo Māori was whipped out of him, caned out of him. And he was scared and frightful of speaking Māori for a very long time. He's passed on now. But that sits part of at the centre of your call as well about the apology.
Yes.
Tick, can you talk us through it?
Well, you see, turning over the stone by the Crown is going to be too difficult to be able to see what's underneath it.
Yeah.
Because there's been some commentary made by both the Minister of Treaty Settlements and also the various Māori ministers that, in fact, we've moved on since then. We've introduced Kohanga Reo. We've introduced the Māori Language Commission. We've got a week of Te Reo Māori, blah, 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 blah. But what they've forgotten is the beginning of the journey and the deliberate policy of the Crown to disempower a generation.
Yeah.
And they recognise that, and it was deliberate. If you think of what has happened in terms of colonisation overseas, if you start with the innocents, if you start and develop this with a young generation that is, you know, susceptible to this kind of doctrine, then what happens is you develop the nation, you develop the whole iwi, it follows the same pattern because it wasn't just language. Language was the inertia, the beginning of disempowerment. Now, if you have a look at it, the plan, the plan in both and it emanated, of course, in a landscape once again that was called the Māori Native Schools.
Yeah, yeah.
So the words at that time conjures up an uncivilized generation. Okay, so that's and there it is. Right? And the attitude towards the children at that time was not just in the time that they went to school, but for the generations that followed the beginning of this disempowerment, started with their language, then with their culture, then with their land, then a dissociation with their whenua, and it goes on and on and on and on. And of course, there you leap forward, right, some years, and you've got Dame Whina Cooper, our queer, matriarch of Ngāpuhi, walking and saying, not one more inch of Māori land.
Yeah.
You see, right? That's the journey. That's the beginning of the journey. And sadly enough, many of those who suffered, the pioneers of it, actually are not here anymore.
Yeah.
And I feel very sad because I've seen it, and I've seen those both kuia, kaumātua, pass away, and this mamaya has been taken with him to the grave. And what I've said to both the Minister of Treaty Settlements, the Minister of Te Arawhiti, who is my own colleague, Kelvin Davis, and I've even written to the Prime Minister, and I've made submissions to the tribunal, and there were no cross-examination by any of the Crown Council in the tribunal hearings because they knew there was a fact. This is a matter of record. How could they argue otherwise when the facts are right there in front of their face? And I remember very clearly the commissioner, Rangiwhenui Walker was one, and you know his tears are coming out of him because he remembers. Right? How can you justify or try to justify that in fact that kind of injustice didn't happen? And what is happening now, there is a resistance, as I said to you, to turn over the stone. And whilst there's been apologies coming right, left, right and centre, for the Morinui Akiwa, for dawn raids and all that. Absolutely. Right? Here is the tongue of the whenua. Here are people of our land. Here are people, the indigenous people, the tongue of the whenua of this land, who suffered an injustice, who's never ever got a sorry. Not yet.
You know, David, there's a paper that was written by Dr. Ranganui Walker, of course. It was called Reclaiming Māori Education. And it talks about that period between the mid-1950s through to the 1960s and beyond. And then of it was also in response to what you and I would know to be the Hun Report. But to be honest, a lot of our whānau today, they wouldn't know what the Hun Report is. So it talks to the history of where this all comes from, and also assimilation. You know, it began with the mission schools, and then it came the native schools, and then the district schools. But there was something interesting. Back in 1964, the Māori Education Foundation, with Sir Tutti Carroll, I think, who was with the Māori Council at the time, turned out, and they said, look, you know what, we should be teaching Te Reo Māori in teacher training colleges, for no other reason that by the time a Māori child leaves high school, the numbers back in, I think, 1969 indicated 79% left with no qualifications. And the reasoning at the time was, well, in fact, we've whipped and we've caned Te Reo Māori out of our young people, but we've done it in such a way that we have given them loss of their language, but more importantly, the teachers we're sending into these schools don't know how to interact with them, because still Māori is the first language, not the second language. And so I absolutely agree with you. It's about understanding that whakapapa and the journey of where it's come from. It just beggars belief that we haven't just fronted up and said, you know what, we've fronted up for the dawn raids. We should front up and apologise for this too.
Do you think that a posthumous apology will be appropriate when that generation is all, you know, komate? Is that appropriate? Is that what they're waiting for? Now, I'm talking to Calvin Dave, and Calvin said he knows very well the injustice. Because, and it's true, it suffered his parents. Mm. And so did Willie Jackson.
Yeah.
And so did the movers and shakers now in the Maori cabinet. They know that.
Mm.
And they've asked me what kind. I said, well, I think that, quite frankly, the apology should come directly from the Crown.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have a lot of apologies from Prime Ministers that come and go. But this apology will go some way, right, to justify you turning over the stone. Right? If it's that difficult, then you're going to have somebody, the apology come from the mana, straight from the house. Perhaps a majesty would be appropriate. And you know what they suggested? Well, does it come from the Governor General? I said the Governor General is an Ngāpuhi woman.
Yeah.
Now, how's that one?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I said I know Cindy Kiro very well, and she would support this apology.
Yeah.
But she'd be embarrassed if she thought that she was given the given the job holding the mantle to apologise to her own people, you know, to really an injustice, right? That incurred that was incurred by Her Majesty. Right, before Cindy was born.
Yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. And not only before Cindy was born, but I mean, we are talking literally about a generation of Māori from the 1930s, 40s, 50s and 60s, midway through to the 1970s. And many of them have passed away. It is kind of like the, I cannot believe for the life of me why it's taken the Y262 claim, for example, the Tauranga claim so long to settle in.
Yep.
And we're still getting around the table when those original claimants themselves have mostly passed away. And we now get into a discussion that their descendants of it have inherited their claim.
Yes.
It just beggars belief.
I remember getting these journals, native schools.
Mm.
Now, what does, you see, people of this generation probably don't, they might, but look up what native means in the Oxford Dictionary.
Mm.
You know? And there it is. There is the kind of attitude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Mean,
there it is. And it permeates from that. But the injustice wasn't just the language. It was a deliberate disempowerment policy of the Crown upon the tongue of the whenua, right, of Aotearoa. That's the underlying purpose of it.
That's right. And
all of a sudden, and somewhere, somehow, right, In the journey, there was, and thank God now we have a generation that recognises the value of our language, of Te Reo Māori.
Mm.
We have many, many, but it took the younger generation, because rednecks, and they were totally opposed to it. They thought it was degrading for them to learn Maori. But it wasn't degrading for me, as a Maori child and a Maori who just only spoke Maori, to go to the bloody high school and to learn how to speak Latin or French.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be joking.
You know, even at school, I remember having to go through Latin classes. You know, by the time I was 15, I knew a Moria Massa Mat. I knew the construction of a dead language from Roman times before I knew my own whakapapa.
Absolutely. And it was just some bloody Shakespeare down there. Yeah. I thought it was a bloody Tommy Warrior with a toyah. How's that one?
It just shows we've got a long way to go. Hey, now, Dover, I want to spend just a quick minute on what's going on up there in the great land of Taitokoro, of course, with COVID-19. There's been the borders in Auckland are about to open over the coming weeks. Yes. We're seeing a record number of Aucklanders begin to book a batch and Airbnb and goodness knows what. The vaccination rates in Taitokoro are still reasonably behind the rest of the country. Do you think we should just call it for what it is and say, hey, look, taiho, you fellas, just give us an extra bit of time. Don't come on up for a holiday just yet. And we've got a bit more work to do. We'll see you in the new year.
Yes. Well, I'll give you my frank answer to that. And I talked to JT when he turned up here and we had a conversation when he brought our mokopunas up from Waipareira, Ngāpuhi, because they were Ngāpuhi mokopunas coming up to see their matuas and to help with the vaccination program and to convince the whānau. But not only that, what I feel is that we have a very, very, a great number of tamaki makaurau belong to Ngāpuhi.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just the Pākehā that has got a few dollars to spend in a big way, which will also help our economy. But the feeling that I've got, if in fact our people down there have been vaccinated, and if they've had two vaccines and they've been tested, then I think that it is, put it this way, it's never safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's never safe. It's like you're crossing the road, you've got to look on both sides to make sure nothing is coming, okay, and then cross over. There's never 100% guarantee that it's safe, but I'm saying that a lot of our people have not witnessed their tangihanga, their loved ones passed on because of this. And the restrictions and the lockdowns have really impacted upon our whanaungatanga, our whānau, our kuia, mentally, right, psychologically. And I would not like to see that lockdown attitude continue. But I would like to see that there was a safe journey, if you like, for those who are coming and those who are here, that the risks will be minimized.
Yeah,
but how do you do that? I suspect that there would be some who couldn't give a damn. But it doesn't matter whether it's going south, north, the four winds. I believe that we've got to take that opportunity and reconcile, you know, our relationships, because it has been, and you're talking about this division.
Yeah.
You see, this is some of the implications that we're talking about, the repercussions of it all, okay? We become alienated from each other, and I see it happening every day, finger pointing, you know, no aroha for each other, and that's going to increase if we don't actually consolidate our whanaungatanga and our relationships right across the motu. But I'm saying specifically here in the Taitokoro, and you're right, we're not right up there with our vaccination rates, but I'm glad I came past Hawaii the other day, okay, and our people are still going in, but I think that they've got to have the opportunity to share the Christmas with their whānaus, because this might be the last time.
Yeah.
This might be the last time. This might be the last time for me too.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be the last time for you. You're like the Dapper Dover of New Zealand politics. You are. Well, you know, I reckon you might be up for another run in the great seat of titles.
Come on, Matthew.
Yeah,
come on, Matthew. You know, I've talked about and I've listened to the things that are happening in bloody local government, and I've got to shake my head, mate.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I've got to admire Nanaia, and I were in the cabinet together.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, she's been ridiculed. She's been some of the cartoons, all this stuff. You know, the Three Waters, do you know that the local government association were crying out for major reform simply because local authorities governments did not have the funds to actually finance the whole restructure of their Three Waters? Do you know that?
Yeah, that's not news.
They've been crying out for years.
Yeah.
Yes. The model mightn't be right, but let's not chuck the baby out with the bathwater. Let's fix it up.
That's right. It's time to get on with the money.
Absolutely. Let's fix it up. Just like what I'm doing, what we're doing with the Manawatawai. Now, what's their contribution?
Mm.
Okay, it's not a town. It's not an urban argument. We're in this bloody waka together, for God's sake.
Exactly.
And if you can't swim in our waters, and the waters are polluted right through, and it comes onto our kaimoana, onto our sea, you know, and our fishery, then, you know, we all have to bloody well accept responsibility. Not driving tractors through the bloody town and abusing people left, right and centre. That doesn't resolve anything.
No,
it never has and it never will.
That's right. It never has and never will. Hey, David Samuels, it's been an absolute pleasure spending time with you, my friend. you stay well, and if we don't talk to you ahead of Christmas, have a Merry Christmas to you and your whānau.
Yes, you too, young man. I hope to catch up with you sometimes in the trenches. So God bless you. Take care.
Absolutely. I'll see you on my next political campaign. Ka kite.